Good afternoon. This is Carol Bond with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated October 18th, 2016. We'll begin with an article on the first page. The headline is A Friendly Connection. And it is a Dateline Decatur, written by Valerie Wells. Patty Jones jokes that she's worked at South Shore's school for 150 years and knows everybody by now. That was Patty Jane's, pardon me. As a family liaison, her favorite thing is home visits, but she does everything from driving a parent to the doctor or picking them up for a parent-teacher conference to help families find assistance in paying their power bill. The job of family liaison was created in 1992 when then-Governor Jim Edgar announced a new initiative, Project Success. The idea was for someone to do the things teachers didn't have time to do in building relationships and helping families connect to the services and help they need. At first, only two schools in Decatur were part of the pilot program, but as it grew, it encompassed nearly all the schools. Each building has a discretionary budget, and the principal can choose to spend some of it on a family liaison, so not every building has one. Quote, "We work with the homeless, that's part of our job, to get them into school and signed up with agencies that they need," Janes said. "We do family events, set up events here at school, just a little bit of everything. Some of the kids come down to take a cool-off period. The teacher will say, 'Go see Miss Patty, it'll be okay.'" Many parents also come to her first when they have a problem, she said, because she's the person they know best. Her job is to be that person, the familiar and friendly face, to serve as the go-between. Quote, "You make a connection with them," she said. "A lot of people are intimidated to go into a school building because they didn't have a good experience in school." Cinnamon Potts holds a bachelor's degree in psychology and worked as a caseworker before becoming a family liaison at Oak Grove School. Social worker Abby Steele said they work closely together and she doesn't know what she'd do without Potts. "One of the things the women do together is organize and maintain the stash of clothes at the school that are available in case a child needs something. One rack holds winter coats, most donated through coat drives, but some bought by the women at garage sales or donated by parents whose children have outgrown them. Northwest Christian Church provides backpacks of food for kids who might not have food at home for weekends and school breaks. And Potts handles the school side of that. She organizes the annual fall festival, alternative to trick-or-treating, and sells snacks to raise money for the Booster Club. Mostly, she's a resource for kids and their families." Quote, "I just love the kids," she said. "That's why I do it." Allie Hamill, one of the district-wide family support coordinators, said family liaisons usually work with about 75% of the families at any given school. First contact is often because a child is missing too much school, and a liaison conducts a home visit to find out why and to offer help. Right now, liaisons are working on compliance with immunization and medical requirements that have to be met, or a child won't be allowed in school under state law. That usually means helping the family connect with health providers. And like Jane's, she enjoys the home visits. Quote, I like to go to the house and have that face-to-face contact and just kind of be a friendly face at the school they can call if they need help, Hamill said. I'd like to describe the pictures connected with this article. One shows volunteers Kristen Green, LaShawn Patrick, and Decatur Public School Family Support Coordinator Terrence Tat Taylor, and Northeast Community Fund Assistant Director David Hinkle. They're packing donated school supplies at the Northeast Community Fund. The donations will be distributed to students in need across the Decatur School District. There are the usual items that one can see, pens and small notebooks and a pencil box and Elmer's school glue. But in the background, there is a rack of what must be nearly 100 plastic clothes hangers, which is kind of unusual, and then two huge baskets of them besides, I guess, from donated clothes. And then one of the gentlemen pictured is holding what appears to be a small fold-up fan, I presume to use when the weather gets really hot. Another photo shows hat and glove donations that were collected with school supplies by Decatur Public School Family Support Coordinators at Northeast Community Fund to be distributed across the school district. It appears to me that some of these might actually be hand crocheted. And finally, there's a picture of Decatur Public School Family Support Coordinators Allie Hamill and Terrence Tat Taylor, who are loading donated school supplies at Northeast Community Fund to be distributed across the district. They're both very focused on the job that they're doing. On page 3, we find this article written by Chris Luzvardi, Council Set for Budgeting Process. In the last Decatur City Council meeting before unveiling plans for next year's city budget, City Manager Tim Gleason said Monday, most of the information is in place for it. Gleason said the budget will be presented to council members in the coming weeks before it is discussed at the next meeting, which is scheduled for Monday, November 7th. It will include information from department heads who Gleason said were given a directive in August to reduce their budgets by 5% compared to this year. They all did an excellent job, Gleason said. We did not need to ask for justification for every line. The city is trying to minimize the impact in the budget of a federally mandated $42 million sewer repair project, he said. Gleason was encouraged that the city has been able to maintain its A1 credit rating from Moody's Investor Service. The agency still has concerns with a negative outlook for the city, but Gleason said many of those factors are out of its control. The credit rating was discussed as the council approved issuing up to $30 million in general obligation bonds as part of the financing for the ongoing Lake Decatur dredging project. Without the new funds, the city would have run out of cash to pay for the dredging by late December or January, said Greg Ciantara, Director of Financial Management. The financing will come in the form of green bonds, which Ciantara said is notable for the city as it strives to provide a positive environmental benefit to qualify for that type of financing. Quote, this will bring notoriety to Decatur, Ciantara said. It will be a first in Illinois. In addition to maintaining the credit rating, Councilman Bill Faber said low interest rates contribute to making it as good of a time as any for the city to borrow money. Quote, "We're seizing that opportunity," Faber said about utilizing low interest rates. The city is expecting the interest rate for the bonds will not exceed 6%. As Gleason said, the average is likely to be around 3%. This will be the city's third bond issue for the dredging project, with the final one likely to be made in the first quarter 2018. In other business, the council approved a rezoning request for a portion of a 23.8-acre property in the 2500 to 2600 blocks of South Business Route 51 and the 900 block of West Grove Road near Rotary Park and Red Tail Run Golf Course. The entire property will now be zoned as a B2 commercial district. Details of any plans to develop the property remained undisclosed, as Assistant City Manager Billy Tyus said zoning decisions are based on if the changes are compatible with the surrounding area, not on who is making the request. The petitioner is listed as Iroquois LLC. On the same page is an article with this headline, Physical Education Challenge. It was written by Chris Lusfardi, and the dateline is Forsyth. Students at Maroa Forsyth Grade School are enjoying a new challenge in their physical education classes. A traverse wall was installed in the gym last spring, and while it got some use before the school year ended, teachers Sean Martin and Amy Smith are looking forward to what can be done over the course of a full school year. Quote, "We'll use it on a regular basis," Martin said. "We had the space for it, and it's fun for the kids." The goal is for the students in kindergarten through fifth grade to move across the wall horizontally, not climb up or down, Martin said. "They're not supposed to cross above a red line marked on the wall," he said. "It's not as easy as it might look," Martin said. Quote, "It's good for all the kids," Martin said. "It builds their self-esteem and confidence." The course can be set up for different challenges as the students move across, Martin said. Quote, "We can make up anything." Martin said a baseball might be placed higher up for them to stretch and reach. In addition, Smith said objects such as repurposed pool noodles can be placed on it to provide obstacles along the way across the wall. Quote, "We're anxious to try it," Smith said. "We want to see how it will work." First grader McKenna Doolin was among the students looking forward to using the wall more often after first trying it as a kindergartner. Quote, "It was fun," she said. "I made it all the way across." Martin said the addition was made possible with the support of the school's community club and donated time from local contractor Joe Sullivan. Donations from the community club really add to what classroom teachers are able to provide for students, Martin said. Quote, "We're lucky to have something like that," Martin said. "We wouldn't be able to get it without the parental involvement and support. It makes a difference." Martin said one of the most useful features of the wall is the mat can be folded up and locked into place, meaning it can't be used without supervision, and adds padding during other activities in the gym, such as basketball games. In one photograph, a physical education teacher, Amy Smith, is showing features in the new traverse climbing wall at Maroa Forsyth. It looks to me as a gigantic, full-size, up-the-wall pegboard into which are inserted at sort of random distances various footholds and handholds of bright colors. And you can see the red line that she was talking about, and also on the floor, the blue mats that require provide padding. And the next photo shows Emmy Smith and Sean Martin showing how the padded covering attaches to the climbing wall when the wall is not in use. Looks like a really interesting activity for physical education students. Just below this article is something written by Ryan Voiles. The dateline is Decatur, but the headline reads this way: Mount Zion looks to raise tax levy. The need to fully fund pensions for the village's police officers will likely equal another increase in the Mount Zion tax levy. Though it will not officially vote on the measure until December, the Village Board of Trustees have told Village Administrator Julie Miller to go ahead and prepare next year's budget to include a tax levy of $1.16 million. The increase would be an additional $10.61 in taxes for the owner of a $75,000 home. All levies are being kept level with the current year, with the exception of the Mount Zion Police Pension Fund, which at $377,904 is a 28% increase from this year. The bind for the village is that when its population reached 5,000 in 2011, it was required by state statute to establish a Mount Zion Police Pension Fund and to fully fund the request from the Police Pension Board each year. Board members had two choices during its Monday evening meeting, with one option to keep the levy nearly level from the current year. Under that option, the police pension would have been short about $46,000. The shortfall would have been covered by taking money out of the village's general fund. But Mayor Mark Wells expressed hesitation that several board members had about that plan, as it could have hampered the village's ability to handle unforeseen circumstances. Quote, "If we kick in that $46,000, then if something happens to a piece of equipment, then we won't have the money to do anything," he said. The board is set to vote on the levy along with the budget for the fiscal year that begins January 1st at its first meeting in December. In other business, the board unanimously approved a change to the village ordinance that would increase the penalty for underage drinking from $25 to $150. The move was seen as a way to provide officers with a quick and efficient way to handle the handful of underage drinking cases they deal with on a monthly basis. In addition, issuing ordinance violations to underage drinkers can help the young drinkers from having long-term damage to their future prospects. Quote, "With this, we can send a message without giving them a criminal record," Miller said. Officers have discretion when dealing with underage drinkers, which can include issuing misdemeanor tickets in cases of repeat offenders. Mary Hunt, who calls herself the Everyday Cheapskate, has this column today. Back to school means shopping lists and fundraisers. Have I been sleeping in a cave for 100 years? It sure feels like it. I just read that Americans are expected to spend $75.8 billion getting their kids outfitted to go back to school this year. And by outfitted, I mean set up with electronic gear, shoes with all the bells and whistles. I like those sneakers with little wheels embedded in the soles. Backpacks, and of course school supplies. That's a whole lot of money. Granted, I don't have school-age children anymore, but come on. The average elementary school kids' must-haves this year totaled $649. For middle school students, that number jumped to $941. And for high school students, the number is $1,402 each, according to the 9th Annual Backpack Index Survey from Huntington Bank in Columbus, Ohio. Look, I'm open to being proven wrong, but is this anywhere close to reasonable? Perhaps if you felt you had to purchase an entire school year's worth of pencils, pens, crayons, paper, notebooks, binders, calculators, printer cartridges, shoes, jeans, slacks, sweaters, blouses, shirts, socks, and undies. But I find that to be a little ridiculous, in that kids grow and styles change. And quite frankly, who wants to do all that laundry? Spreading the cost of these items over the course of the school year seems more reasonable to me, except for notebook paper, notes, pens, and paper. Those items are so cheap at office supply stores at the start of a new school year that you would be smart to stock up for the entire year. So am I missing something here? I'd love to go head on with any family to prove that I could get the kids looking mighty fine and get them all the stuff they need for a lot less than the statistical per child average. While we're on the subject of school, let's throw fundraisers into the discussion. Every year about this time, I get a flood of messages that are some variation of the following. Quote, I am so sick of my kids bringing home catalogs full of cheap, overpriced stuff that the school expects us to sell. How can we deal with this? I'd love some advice and insight on how other parents do it. I remember those days. Of course, I wanted my kids to win the prize for being the best little fundraisers, which added to the pressure we already felt from the school and Little League. I pity all of my coworkers, neighbors, friends, and relatives who got caught up in my web of obligation. I'm married to a guy who is a big old softy when it comes to children bearing boxes for sale to raise money for their schools and teams. I think we still have some world's finest chocolate bars left in the refrigerator from last season, and probably a tub or two of cookie dough in the freezer too. Oh, and gift wrap and candles. Now that I think about it, maybe I haven't moved beyond the pressure of fundraiser season after all. So how do you deal with fundraisers? I can't think of a better place to unload, share, question, or plead your case for your fundraiser of choice than by joining the conversation on EverydayCheapskate.com. So she's looking for people to join her in what seems to be an ongoing conversation. Dr. Keith Roach has a letter that may have interested be of interest today. Dear Dr. Roach, you recently wrote an article on the risk of heart disease with aspirin and anti-inflammatory drugs. What about acetaminophen, Tylenol? I've been taking this for many years of pain following spinal surgeries. And his answer is this. There have been some studies that have shown a mild increase in risk of heart disease among chronic heavy users of acetaminophen. However, most of the data have shown that among people who use it every other day or less on average, if there is a risk, it probably is small. Heavy users of anti-inflammatory medicines such as naproxen are probably at a higher than average risk for heart disease as well. Acetaminophen is considered to be one of the safest medications for pain relief, but all medicines have the potential for side effects. We'll pick up a couple of brief articles now. There's one on Thanksgiving Jumpstart. Don't count on Thanksgiving reverting to its traditional status of feasting on turkey and giving thanks. Macy's announced Monday it was staying committed to Thanksgiving Day shopping, saying it'll open an hour earlier this year. The move dampened hopes that other key stores will back away from the Christmas creep. Macy's announcement shows that many major chains will probably stick with the Thanksgiving opening and may even open earlier than last year as they try to avoid being trumped by the competition. The retailer plans to open at 5 p.m. on Thanksgiving, with most Macy's stores closing at 2 a.m. and then reopening at 6 a.m. Friday. It cited ongoing customer interest in shopping on Thanksgiving, both at Macy's and at many other retails. And that last part was a quotation. We look ahead now to another article. This one has to do with a fundraiser. We Are One Community fundraiser will be 6 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, October 19th in the Beach House. Decatur Trades and Labor Assembly will present George Meany Scouting Award to Ed Robison. We Are One Community is a local union advised committee that gives to nonprofit agencies in Macon County. For more information, contact the Community Foundation of Macon County at 217-429-3000. The Decatur Police Department will partner with Project AVA again this year for the second Halloween Boo-tique program. Donated costumes will be provided to needy kids, and the police department at 707 West Southside Drive will serve as a collection center for new and gently used items. A box will be available in the front lobby from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. through October 9th. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the October 18th issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.